Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Bond, James Bond. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. Thank you so much for being with us today on the radio. Great to have you with us because we, after all, are in a relationship and have been for many, many years. The talk show host and listener relationship, obviously a very vital part of talk radio. And, you know, what I find interesting is doing this for a living for as long as I have. Sometimes it's very easy for stories halfway around the world that are huge to the people halfway around the world don't really have much resonance here in Western New York. And I have not found that to be the case with the situation between Hamas and Israel. Now, most of the people I know who have, shall we say, vested interest over there in terms of people they know and love, most of those folks are Jewish Israelis. But that's not to say that other people don't have vested interest in what is going on over there as well. Now, I've put out calls today to Congressman Nick Langworthy and Congressman Brian Higgins, and both of those gentlemen are welcome to join us at any time they're able to do. Obviously, there's a lot going on in Washington with the Speaker of the House situation and a million other things. So if at all possible, we will get both Congressman Langworthy and Congressman Higgins on the air. And I know what some of you are thinking. Oh, he might get Congressman Higgins on. That's just further evidence that WBEN has gone to the left. Not true. Repeatedly, I mean, look, my politics are pretty much what they've been my entire life, but I'm going to tell you that the disagreements that I've had over the years with Brian Higgins, they've been political disagreements, and there's been no a personal component to it for quite some time, and there will not be. I found him to be a gentleman. We've spoken off the air. He's always kept confidences, and I value what he has to say. I value what Nick Langworthy has to say and other people who are in the know, just as I valued greatly what David Bellavia had to say yesterday when he was on our program in the afternoon. Now, one of the individuals I was supposed to have had on today, and I'm not going to name this individual, is a local person I know very well who basically was in Israel when all heck started breaking loose over the weekend. And it was a very scary situation for this individual and the family of this individual. And this is someone about whom I care very, very deeply. And somebody else with whom I spoke today actually is a physician and had family members in Israel. And one of his, it's a very long and convoluted story, so I'll try to tell it in as linear a fashion as possible. This individual basically was forced to rent a private aircraft to get them out of Israel because they did not feel safe where they were. And they just wanted to get the heck out of that, even if it meant maxing out every credit card they had. You cannot put a price on human limbs, life, and safety. So this is a situation, and I'd like to talk about this today. And I guess one of my problems, my friends, is that I don't know exactly how many people listening to the show can relate to these kinds of stories. In other words, trying desperately to escape from a zone of war, a zone of horrible conflict that is going on in the region. You may have family members in Israel. You may have younger family members in Israel. You may have older family members who are in Israel. You might have some people in your family who left the United States or some third country under the laws of return for Israel in order to become Israeli citizens. This is something that hits, I think, a lot of people very close to home. And you also may have Palestinian relatives for whom this is hitting very, very close to home. What is the answer? I don't know. On this one, honestly, I don't know. I mean, some of the general precepts of an answer are when you have an aggressor, the more you don't deal with the aggressor and you let the aggression to fester and metastasize, the greater an issue it is down the road. So it's best to take care of it immediately. And oftentimes, the example of Munich in 1938 is brought up in these discussions of geopolitical crises that take place. And what that is all about, for those who don't know, back in 1938, they were trying to figure out what was going to happen in Europe, because Hitler was, as you know, insane. At that point in his life, he was craftily insane, but he was bound and determined to take over Europe. So what happened was they basically, between Nazi Germany and fascist Italy and France and the UK, they basically made up plans to give up part of Czechoslovakia, the Sudetenland, to the Nazis. And of course, Hitler said, well, this is my last territorial demand in Europe. I've got nothing else that I want on the table. And then before you knew it, just like a chop of salami, before you knew it, the Nazis had taken over most of Czechoslovakia, including the part of Czechoslovakia with the Skoda works, which were very, very important in terms of munitions manufacturing. So the bottom line is, when somebody talks about appeasement, and appeasement simply makes aggressors more aggressive, there is some historical precedence for that. And looking past those kinds of macro events, think about in your own life the micro events that have happened. And you know, perhaps from being bullied in the playground or bullied on the school bus, that the longer the aggressor is allowed to be aggressive without being checked, the more likely it is that the aggressor is going to become more aggressive. So when you hear any references made to Munich in the context of what is going on between Israel and Hamas, that is partially what they are talking about when they talk about Munich. In fact, one of the movies about which you've heard me talk at great length in the various weeks leading up to this situation currently in the Middle East is the Cuban Missile Crisis and the movie 13 Days. And that was a great illustration of the mindset, the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times, if you will, of the early 1960s. Didn't anybody learn anything from Munich? And what was interesting is that President Kennedy's father was actually one of the architects of the appeasement policy and a big fan of Neville Chamberlain, who was instrumental in bringing that failed policy to fruition. And later on in life, President Kennedy and his brother, the Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, they faced criticism over whether appeasement or weakness ran in families. And there was a great deal of concern. And this goes beyond the movie. This is on official White House recordings. This goes beyond the movie. There were people who believed that the Kennedys did not have the moral fiber or the toughness to stand up to the Soviet Union. And as a result, we were going to be forced into making trade after trade after trade until finally the Soviets would do something for which we would not trade. And then we would certainly find ourselves embroiled in World War III. And I reference that movie because, you know, when you look at events, folks, one of the things I think you'll find as you listen to this show and as you listen to David Bellavia's show as well, because David and I are both very, very much into history. David has the added advantage, of having been a combat veteran. David has the advantage of being a Medal of Honor recipient. He has put his courage on display before the entire world, and he understands what it is like to be in combat. And he talked today about being in combat, being like, you get ready, and then you wait. And then you wait some more, and then you wait some more, and then you wait again. And then you have a cigarette, and you wait some more. And he really puts you in the picture of what it is like in a situation like that, like I think very, very few people are able to do. See, for me, I can watch documentaries about it, and I can read books about it, and I can try to understand it as best I can vicariously through the words of other people. But with David, he's been there, he's done that, and he has actually, obviously, he's actually lived it. And I'm very concerned about this situation in Israel. I don't like to see innocent people hurt in any way, shape, or form. And I don't care whether they're Jews, whether they're Muslims, whether they're Israelis, whether they're Palestinians. I don't like to see innocent people pay the price and suffer the consequences for decisions made by people who might not be that innocent or might not actually have their own best interest at heart. I'm wondering today on the program, and again, folks, I've been working the phones all morning long, and I thought for sure that we were going to have an individual on the program whose family was able to just get out in the nick of time of basically a zone of war. And I'm hoping that we're able to get Congressman Higgins and Congressman Langworthy on the program. And look, both of those individuals are going to be treated with respect. And Brian Higgins knows that he comes on this show. It's not some kind of an ambush situation. It's not, hey, let's get Brian on the show and see if we can't embarrass him or make a fool. It doesn't work that way with Brian and myself. Doesn't work that way with Byron and myself. It doesn't matter that we don't share a lot of the same political views, all right? We just try our best to get information out there to you and to be as fair as possible. But, excuse me, I must take a sip of my water here. Wow, this is a mystery-flavored, some kind of a blueberry concoction today. Okay, I'll take that. So, anyway, getting back to it, I wonder how many of you right now have family in harm's way over there, and how are you able to keep in touch? Have you been able to keep in touch? What is the, and I'm not trying to diminish the importance of it in any way, shape, or form, but unfortunately, it is a truism that in a war zone, there is a pucker factor. We saw that in Iran. Do you remember when there was great concern among the Iranian military that the United States was going to launch an attack against Tehran for something the Iranians had done, and it was thought that the United States or one of its proxy nations over there had flown a sortie over an airstrip. And as a result of that miscalculation, the Iranians shot down a civilian jetliner. And I might also add, the pucker factor is not something that is exclusive to the Iranians or people who are Muslim. We also, in the United States, we took down a civilian airliner back in the 1980s. It was an Iranian airliner, and our guys made a tragic miscalculation. Whether there were radio issues or not on the civilian airliner, I don't know. But the bottom line is the Iranians accidentally shot down a civilian airliner within relatively recent memory, and the United States, back in the 1980s, shot down a civilian airliner because of the pucker factor, because things were moving too fast, things were moving so furiously, and nobody wanted to be caught flat-footed. And obviously, this is one of the great areas of consternation that I think many of us have. It's not just the battle. It's not just the and David talks about this a lot, and it's a great expression. It's not just the kinetic warfare. It's also the thinking that goes into how you defend yourself, how you launch offensive situations, how you defend yourself against offensive situations, and obviously, the more tense a situation is, the greater the pucker factor happens to be. Like when the Iranians shot down that civilian airliner a few years back, had that airliner been flying at any other time, pretty much in any other place, chances are very strong that those people would still be alive today. But because there was panic in the air and nobody wanted to be caught in a use 'em or lose 'em situation when it comes to defensive surface-to-air missiles, they decided to launch. And tragically, they launched on an airliner that was filled with innocent civilians. Now, I wonder how many of you listening to my voice right now have people in your life who are maybe vacationing in Israel, who are living in Israel. In fact, didn't we have an Amherst council member? Didn't Bill Kendall, under the law of return as a Jew, didn't he take advantage of that to move to Israel? I'm thinking maybe 5 years ago, give or take a couple. But look, many of you have family in Israel. And again, some of you may be Jews, some of you may be Muslim, some of you may be nothing in particular, but have a strong fondness for and an affinity for the land that makes up the Jewish state. The phone number on WBEN, and I hate to tell you this, but this is one of those situations where I wish I could tell you that I knew so-and-so, or I had a cousin so-and-so who was in Israel near the combat zone, but for good or for ill, I don't happen to have that. But chances are excellent in this audience, those of you listening, some of you, this is a very personal story. This goes well beyond the news, and this goes into your life. And one of the people that I was supposed to have on today is still, they're safe and they're sound, but they are still so shaken up by what they experienced that they simply were not able to come on the air today. And of course, we totally and completely respect that. Why wouldn't we? What kind of savages would we be if we were to mock or in some way make light of the fact that somebody who had just been through a life-changing and life-endangering situation wouldn't come on a stupid radio show? That would make us seem pretty tiny and pretty small, so we're not swimming in that poop, believe me. 803-0930, do you have a family or personal connection to what is going on right now with Israel? How closely are you following this? And I will waive for today the once-a-week calling rule, because I know Rambo Jim called in yesterday, and I also know that this is right up Rambo Jim's alley, talking about stuff like this. So especially for Rambo Jim, but for anybody who called in yesterday, I'm going to waive the once-a-week rule. That's a call that I get to make as the host of the show, so I've decided to make that call today, and I hope it's okay with you guys. It's Bowerly Loves on News Radio 930 WBEN. Phone number is 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Lizzie McGuire, and you know, it's interesting. I don't play that gratuitously to try to make light of any situation that is happening right now, but the fact of the matter is that history, my opinion, tends to be cyclical. Music as an adjunct to popular culture is a reflection of tumultuous times, and the fact that that song is almost as relevant now as it was back when it was released in the 1960s is both troubling and educational. Those of you who have family over in the region of war, what are you hearing from your family? I cannot imagine the tension under which you must find yourselves. And again, I don't want to be too detailed about this, but one of the people I was supposed to have on the program today just got out of Israel pretty much the last possible opportunity on a commercial airline flight. And this individual is a strong individual. This is not somebody who needs a safety room, okay? This is somebody who is a very strong, capable individual. But this individual is obviously shaken up, and there is somebody else that I don't know directly, but I know through a physician friend who basically could not get a commercial flight out of Israel and found themselves in a situation where they had to rent an aircraft in order to get away. And I don't think that those people are unique amongst the number of people who might be listening to this show, or people I might know or you might know, who for whom this story, it isn't just, oh, well, somewhere around the world something is happening and it's affecting a whole bunch of people, but it's affecting you here in Western New York. I would love to know how your friends and family in Israel, whatever persuasion you happen to be, are holding up and are bearing up under this situation. And taking this a few steps further, you know, we talked just last week about that whole duck and cover and fallout shelters. And remember the emergency alert system test? And we ended up doing about a three-hour show on that, if you will remember, and made reference to the fact that here in the United States, we don't really have anything like a civil defense system. Those old fallout shelter signs, good luck finding one of those, because you won't. And even if you found a fallout shelter, I assure you that any cheese or crackers or water they put into those things in 1953, you know, when Stalin died, are probably no good now. And you might remember some of the stories with which people called to talk about touring, for example, the sub-basement of Buffalo City Hall. And here we are, less than a week later, and we're talking about situations involving civil defense, this time in Israel, but in a very real situation. And getting back to something about which we spoke yesterday, and I'm hoping that we have people who are able to talk about this with a greater degree of expertise than am I. Those of you who might have worked the cloak and dagger side of things, the intel side of things. One of the things, one of the issues that is bothering me tremendously, it's been bothering me since the attacks commenced, and it continues to bother me, is what I don't understand, and maybe you would have an explanation that makes sense for me, is the Israeli intelligence people, Mossad. They are among the very finest intelligence services in the world. They've got their tentacles everywhere. They have informants everywhere. They have people on the payroll everywhere, okay? They are very, very, very good at what they do. And I'm having a very difficult time reconciling how such an institution like Mossad can absolutely drop the ball, not just drop the ball, but drop it right on their kneecaps and ankles when analyzing the various bits and chunks of intel that were coming in. And there are so many things that come to mind, and I'd love to hear from those of you who maybe professionally did it for a while as part of your military or government service career who can actually talk about this stuff, use one of your voice scramblers. At least that way you'll get your point out. But in all seriousness, because this is serious business, what really concerns me is, and look, this is only speculation. This is not established fact. This is only speculation. And we talked about this yesterday with David Bellavia. We talked about it to a lesser degree with Congressman Nick Langworthy. But what I find very troubling is, what if you had a situation where Mossad had information indicating that these attacks were in fact going to take place, and for reasons that you and I might not be able to understand, they did not share as much information as they should have with the commander-in-chief of the Israeli military, with Netanyahu? Are there such high tensions within Israeli politics that people in Mossad would actually put the future of the Jewish state at risk by allowing this kind of an attack to take place and actually get underway? Because to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, okay? Everything I know about the world of intelligence comes to me from conversations I've had with people who were part of that world, reading I've done about that part of the world, that is to say, intel, various technologies that are now used in intelligence gathering. So, in other words, you might have a better scope and breadth of knowledge than I do. And if you served, I'm sure you do. There's some things of which I'm very good, some things that about which I don't know an awful lot about. But everything today, well, not everything, but let's just go back. Do you remember last week? And the way these things tie together sometimes I find amazing and a little bit freaky at times. But last week we got into a conversation about, well, how would you declare war? How would you have a war against the United States? And somebody called in and said, well, I think the Chinese are going to attack us. They're going to attack us on the East Coast. They're going to attack us on the Pacific Coast. And to me, it was a very unrealistic scenario, because we have sonar set up. We have a sonar array and net set up around the perimeter of the continental United States that would be very hard for enemy submarines, for example, to penetrate without being detected. And even before enemy submarines would even come anywhere close to that line, the satellites that we have would easily detect a buildup of troops, of logistical support, even things like railroad delays. And if you've got, for example, around a military encampment in China, let's just assume here, you had a sudden cessation of commercial rail traffic and its substitution by military traffic, do you think that wouldn't raise just a few alarm bells at CIA or NSA? And you think they might not be calling their friends at Spa War and DARPA saying, hey, we need some clearer, sharper resolution photographs of this? So the idea of a Pearl Harbor-like attack happening again to the United States, is it always a possibility? Yeah, of course it's always a possibility. But do our intelligence capabilities make that a less likely scenario? In my opinion, they do. And they do, because you lose the element of surprise. A big factor in the relative success of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on Sunday, December 7, 1941, was the surprise factor. And those of you who've seen the movie Tora, 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 or as the pilot Fushida says in the movie, Toya, 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 that meant that the Japanese had achieved complete surprise, coming in from the west and going over Pearl Harbor and bringing about the destruction of so many of our naval vessels, not the aircraft carriers, thank goodness, and most importantly, about 3,000 of our military personnel, not to mention an unknown number of civilian casualties who were not only killed by the Japanese bombers, torpedo planes, and Zeros, but were also killed by the anti-aircraft fire. What goes up must come down, and unfortunately, in the case of Hawaii, a lot of the rounds that we sent up to try to take down the Japanese planes didn't hit the planes, but they did come down in Honolulu. And one particularly gruesome story involved a family of five in one car, and they were all taken out by a tragic and obviously unintentional direct hit by munitions on the vehicle in which they happened to be in. But as far as the surprise, I just want to get back to this nature, and I'm going to take another sip of my beverage, excuse me. But one of the other things with surprise, just getting back to that for a moment, is are you as confused by this as I am? Because there is no conceivable way. Remember we talked to David Bellavia about this yesterday? I mean, he's a Medal of Honor recipient. He kind of knows what he's talking about when it comes to the military and intel. And we spoke with Congressman Nick Langworthy yesterday about this. It's very disconcerting to me to imagine any scenario under which Israeli intelligence caught wind of what was about to happen and for whatever reason did not pass it up the chain of command. Who would benefit from such a move? Why would anybody do that? Is Netanyahu that despised that you be willing to put the lives of thousands of Israeli men, women, and children on the line in order to make a political point to help bring down a government? I mean, that's not the way most of us think. It certainly isn't the way I think. You've got to be on the same team when you are defending your nation against people who want to drive it into the sea. I'm very concerned about what happened with Israeli intelligence, and I'll tell you something else. I'm going to back that up. I also am concerned about American intelligence because, you know, there would be some redundancy. There certainly is a lot of cooperation between Mossad, CIA, NSA, and all of our alphabet soup agencies. And how would it be possible that our intelligence experts and the Israeli intelligence experts simultaneously could miss the electronic communications, could miss the buildup and amassing of the materials needed for an assault? I find that to be very, very troubling, and I want answers about that. I don't know if I'm pounding the wrong drum, but I'd like your thought on this. 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. I mean, we have people, your friends and neighbors in Buffalo, who are just back from Israel, and many of them are shaking and quaking in their boots because they weren't sure they were going to make it out. And that makes an international story very, very local, especially when you know some of the people who have experienced it. And again, I am waiving my one call per my one call per week per caller rule for today, especially with Rambo Jim in mind, because I know that this is right up his alley. So why would I not let Jim on? Let's go to Rich in Buffalo on WBEN. Rich, welcome to the show. I've done a lot of talking, and it's your turn now.
Okay, Jim. I don't have any, you know, specific expertise. However, I'm putting a couple of things together. I've listened to some other analysts when I have time, and one thing that stood out is they're reporting that Israel has been increasingly relying on better technology to do intelligence, and I don't believe that the intelligence community would sabotage Netanyahu. And so that's just absurd. Not that you're making that assertion, but I think that the explanation is twofold. One is they're increasing their reliance on intelligence, on technology, as opposed to human tell. And we've heard that this has been a fault and failing in our own government and our own military and intelligence agencies. And in fact, if you bring it down to the local level, when you see a jailbreak, a prison break, when you see two New York City police officers get gunned down while they're just sitting in their car in the Bronx, there's something more than just the technology. There's a general inattention in our society, and then there's people that aren't paying attention to the intel on the street. We find it hard to solve crimes. There aren't these relationships. We don't have anybody even covertly embedded in communities to find out who is doing all this killing and so on. So this is across the board. It's going all the way up. It's not happening.
My dear friend, if we did have people who were embedded as CIs within various terrorist organizations, we wouldn't know about it, would we? Because they would keep that under wraps for the safety and security of the operative.
Yes, except for the fact that it's been widely reported that we do not have the kind of, they call human tell, that we used to have.
Well, that's what they say.
And we're relying increasingly on cyber, on devices, on satellites, on all of these things. And what happened, according to this analyst, and I couldn't describe all of the various systems that Israel has been adopting in terms of technology, but they said that they've taken their eye off the ball and they've increased. You know, they've used these systems as opposed to the hard on the ground, boots on the ground intelligence, and then just paying attention to these signs and signals that are going on. And
I'd like to talk to you further about this after the news at 3, so I'm going to put you on hold on WBEN. One of the things, and I believe this actually came up last week when we're talking about the United States and China, you do obviously need to have human intelligence. You need to have people very, very high up who are willing to turn on the government which has supported them. And one of the problems with technological intelligence is it has the ability to monitor basically every phone call, every email, every communication you could possibly imagine. We actually have, believe it or not, dragonfly drones. You think it's a dragonfly. It's actually gathering intelligence. They've got nanotechnology bugs. You think it's a bug on the wall. It's a bug, all right, but it's not an insect. It's gathering intelligence. But one of the problems with all of these gadgets is the more intel that is gathered, the more difficult it is to assimilate all of that intel into a larger picture. And then if you're going to be gathering however many bits of intelligence as you possibly can, the ability to find context for those little bits of intelligence becomes increasingly more difficult the more intel there is. And if you even have a home security system, you could have a 4-camera home security system. And trust me, after about an hour of looking at those tapes, your mind wanders, things get a little bit blurry. So if you could just multiply that by several million times, you'll understand, and I think you already do, that gathering intelligence is one thing. Being able to coordinate and categorize the intelligence and then act upon intelligence that is actionable are several different things. And this sounds like something that is of interest to you. It certainly is of interest to me, and I can't wait to continue our conversation on this. Now, I think it was David Bellavia who mentioned that there are people within the Israeli intel community who are not big fans of Netanyahu. And quite frankly, it would not surprise me to see people in any intelligence organization who are not 100% loyal to their commander-in-chief. And look, I hope you'll forgive me putting my tinfoil hat on and my conspiracy theory hat on, but I am one of those crazy people who believes that during the Cuban Missile Crisis of October 1962, I think people in our military, such as Curtis LeMay, who was a bona fide World War II hero, I do think that the Joint Chiefs of Staff were trying to get us drawn into a war so they could go into Cuba and invade it right that time instead of the Bay of Pigs fiasco for which Kennedy took responsibility, even though it was Lemnitzer and Alan Dulles who, at the end of the day, said, all you got to do is sign in the dotted line and our Cuban brigade will take care of the rest. But hold on. There's a lot to talk about with this stuff. And, you know, folks, it's fascinating to me how relevant history becomes in the current era. So when you want to know why people like David and myself read so much and watch so much about history, it's because it does tend to repeat itself, and you can learn from history.